Welcome to the Med Device Cyber Podcast, the podcast that dives into the critical world of medical device cybersecurity. I'm your host, Christian Espinoza, joined by my colleague, Trevor Slattery. Each week, we explore the latest trends, share expert insights, and discuss real-life stories that highlight the importance of protecting the devices we trust with our health. Whether you're a manufacturer, regulatory affairs professional, or a concerned loved one, this podcast is for you. Let's get started. Hi, welcome back to the Med Device Cyber Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about an important topic, AI, specifically AI medical devices, and some of the risk that AI introduces. We'll also be talking about a little bit about the history of AI. We'll go back to 1997 when AI first came out. A lot of people don't realize it. And we'll talk about what manufacturers can do to help secure their devices that have AI in them. And we'll also talk a little bit about some of the attacks on AI and some of the guidance on AI. So I'm your host, Christian Espinoza. I'm here with Trevor Slattery. How's it going today, Trevor?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing today?
You know, I did bookkeeping last night. I watched a little bit of our last episode, and I had nightmares about bookkeeping, but I did it last night and did not have nightmares. But I took some magnesium before I went to bed, and I think it helps me sleep better.
Yep. Yeah. Do you have that, what's that powder called? It's Calm or something like that?
You know, I used to take Calm, the gummies, but they stopped selling the gummies. I used to get them at Whole Foods. I don't like the powder, but I like the gummies.
They sell them at the Whole Foods here.
The gummies?
Yeah.
Okay. I should check again. I thought they stopped making it with the gummies.
Yeah, I guess
you I've been trying to balance my energy. So like in the morning I have like coffee with, brain octane oil, just like MCT oil. And then if I have the right kind of nitro cold brew around 1 p.m., I have energy the whole day. But then I'm like a little bit wired, so I have to take magnesium to go to sleep. But if I had the wrong kind of cold brew, like only certain brands I can drink, if I had the wrong one, I get super irritable the rest of the day. So it's like this balancing act, you know?
Huh. What's the right brand?
It's a Modern Times.
Modern Times. San Diego.
Okay. They only have it at Whole Foods. I tried to order it on Amazon, but they don't have it on Amazon. And then every time I go to Whole Foods, they're like out of it. So if they have it, I buy like every one of them they have.
There you go. Yeah, I've been getting these yerba mates at Whole Foods there. I think it's Peruvian or Brazilian or something like that, but super strong tea. And I can't have any after like 9 a.m. or I won't sleep at night. But hey, it works great in the day.
Awesome. Well, I guess we're caffeinated and wired, so we can start the podcast talking about AI. So let's kind of start at the beginning and define what AI. I think there's a lot of ambiguity and confusion about AI, like what it is and how it relates to ML or machine learning. Do you want to like explain AI to our listeners, Trevor?
Yeah, I think that AI and machine learning are used interchangeably incorrectly. They are similar and connected, but they're not the same. So AI, artificial intelligence, is exactly that. It's something that is trying to replicate human intelligence and human behavior, human process. Machine learning is essentially trying to get a computer to train itself to perform a specific task. So machine learning is effectively a type of AI, but not all AI is machine learning, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know we did a little prep for the podcast, and you mentioned Clippy is one of the first AIs, and we confirmed that. And I looked it up, and Clippy was manufactured or I guess created by Microsoft in 1996 and came out with Office 97. So it's been almost 30 years. Do you remember Clippy, or did you ever use Clippy? You seem to know a lot about Clippy, but I don't know if you've used it before.
I caught the tail end of Clippy back in, I guess that was Windows Vista. That was kind of right when they sunsetted Clippy.
Yeah, so Clippy was that paperclip that if you were trying to do something, it would like pop up on your screen, right? And tell you like, hey, it looks like you're trying to do this. How can we help you? It's kind of like Gemini for Google Workspace now. Or what's the one you like to use from Microsoft? Copilot?
Copilot.
It's kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I liked Clippy more. You know, Clippy was a little more personable, but it is kind of interesting. That was one of the original first sources of an actual AI, even though it was super simple, super basic. It didn't have any complex process, but it was trying to mimic human behavior. It would talk to you like it was a person. It would try to help you out with your questions instead of just responding like a machine, which is, you know, very, there's no emotion behind it. There isn't any, there's no sugarcoating. There's no trying to make anything sound nice. It's just the actual output. But Clippy was trying to be like a personable assistant. And so that was one of the first instances of AI, despite how basic it was. And now, of course, you know, you can ask all these different AI models just about anything and they will respond like you're talking to a person, which is really cool and also a little bit freaky at the same time.
Yeah. And I think most of us are familiar with ChatGPT. There's a push to add AI to medical devices to help with diagnosis, to help with surgery and other treatments. So with any technology, there's risk. And in January of 2025, January 7th, the FDA came out with some new guidance for medical device manufacturers because more and more manufacturers are adding AI to their products. So what are some of the risks to medical devices? And we don't need to talk about these specific attacks. We can go through that later. But like, based on your experience and our experience with BlueGo, what are some of the risks with medical devices and AI?
Well, I think that sort of the first thing to understand is what is the application for AI in medical devices. There are lots of different technologies that are popping up left and right. Image enhancement is a really popular one. Another one is making diagnostic decisions based on a large set of data. It can really vary depending on the application. Similar with a normal medical device, no AI enabled, we have to look at what the expected use is to understand what the misuse could be. So if we have something making a diagnostic decision, it's going to be trained on some data. And what if something goes wrong with that training data? So what are we able to do about protecting that training data? How are we able to make sure that it's making accurate diagnostic decisions? And what happens if someone's able to poison that decision-making process and cause it to hallucinate bad results? Same with image enhancement. What if it can create a problem out of nowhere or blur out a problem that was already there? So it is really about looking at the application, but part of the difficulty with AI being such a newly widely adopted technology is it isn't as established as some older technologies that have been around for a long time. They're tried and true and tested, and we know what the process and what the risks can be. AI is still very new. There are a lot of new attacks coming out all the time against AI and machine learning and different sorts of large language models, things like that. So it's very dangerous to have these in a lot of uses, but the value add that they provide can be pretty massive. So it is a little bit of a double-edged sword.
Now, let's back up just a second and talk about that. You mentioned a couple of things, the model and the data or training data. Can you elaborate a little bit with how that works with AI? I don't think everyone's, you know, 100% familiar with AI. I think a lot of us use ChatGPT to understand a little bit, but what does that mean? Because I know in ChatGPT, you feed it knowledge, then it learns the knowledge. So what does that mean to you, the model and the knowledge or the data you're feeding the model, the training data?
The AI model is effectively the AI itself. So it's what you're interacting with. Like ChatGPT, they have a couple different versions of ChatGPT. They have like 3.5 and 4 and 01 and a few others. Each one of those is a model and it is trained on a specific set of data. It has all sorts of crazy data science stuff going on that, you know, it's a little bit beyond me to understand exactly how all that works, but basically you're taking a bunch of input, having it learn, and then it's going to provide output based on what it learned. So with a medical device, it's the same process. We'll go back to, let's say, the diagnostic example. If something is trying to diagnose whether or not a tumor is cancerous, you feed it thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of examples of tumors, some of which are cancerous, some of which aren't, and you mark the cancerous ones so that the AI starts to recognize what are the signs of cancer in a tumor. And of course, not all cancerous tumors are going to be the same. It's going to see a whole bunch of different variances in a bunch of different tumors. But the thought process is, if you feed it a large enough and accurate enough data set, it's going to see the vast majority of cases and understand what will fundamentally make a tumor cancerous, instead of just trying to say, oh, it looks just like this other one. It's going to say, oh, well, it has these different attributes of these 12 different tumors, which would lead me to believe that it's cancerous. But to do that, you need a lot of data, a lot of information. Some of the newer AI models are trained on hundreds of billions of different bits of information and parameters, data sets. So having a lot of information to feed a medical AI is what can help give it, or help it provide accurate results. Collecting that information can be a little bit difficult, but a lot of, you know, luckily digital health has not been a recent development. There is a lot of digital information out there for AIs to train on.
With all this data, I know some of the risks with AI, we'll go through some of the specific ones here in a minute. But if the data, it's kind of like where they say GIGO, garbage in, garbage out with an AI, because if you're feeding it garbage, it's going to learn garbage and its results are going to be garbage. And the other thing is, which I think is a risk, is a lot of AI, if it doesn't know the answer, it will make one up. And if you use ChatGPT, you probably realize or seen this happen. Is this a risk with medical devices as well?
Definitely. So I think the biggest breakthrough that will come soon with AI is figuring out how to get AI to say, I don't know. If you ask AI a question and it isn't
sure. Humans can't even do that. Humans rarely say they don't know. So since we're creating AI, how are we going to make AI do it?
And that's part of the problem is AIs are usually trained on what humans do. And if you go... AIs are trained on information online. If you think about we're sort of walking into a large language model here, but the principle still applies. If you look at, we'll say, a thread on Reddit where someone's asking a question, you aren't going to see any responses of someone going, huh, that's a good question, I don't know. People are going to come with an answer, whether or not it's actually correct. They're going to try to provide an answer. And so AIs are going to do the same thing. They're going to try to provide an answer. If it doesn't know what the answer is, it quite often will just make something up. And so it'll try to get a convincing sounding answer. And unfortunately, AI is really, really good at being convincing even when it's wrong. And so finding a way to ensure that it's providing correct output is a difficult challenge. If someone finds a way to get AI to just say, I don't know what the answer is, then that would definitely save a lot of headache. But I think with a lot of the medical applications leaning more towards that pure machine learning, which is still a form of AI, but a little bit more targeted, that risk gets reduced since it's less for general knowledge, more for targeted application.
You bring up a good point, and I know the FDA is requiring labeling, specific labeling around AI software as a medical device or AI medical devices. And it sounds like some of this labeling is related to what you just said. Like if the AI won't say it doesn't know, it's up to a human to do some sort of like checking up on the AI to validate it. So that would be part of the labeling, I would think, because that's a risk with the AI.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So someone has to understand that AI can't always be accurate. I think with how new AI is, a lot of people, especially those that aren't, you know, as involved in the tech world as some of us might be.
It's not that new. We just said it came out in 96.
Well, you know, widespread adoption is pretty new still.
Okay.
But yeah, AI as a concept is nothing new.
But I think part of the movie about it is called AI. I think Spielberg directed that.
Yeah?
Cool. You never seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
I that may have came out like 25 years ago, too. It's like, I think the AI is a kid and humans like fall in love with the AI. I forgot. This is a long time ago, but yeah.
You know, there was actually a lawsuit against an AI company where people were, it was like this AI girlfriend simulator and people were falling in love with it. And then there was a huge class action lawsuit against it because they were like, this is inhumane and predatory.
Oh, Well, that's a whole different topic.
Life imitates art 25 years later.
Like, let's go back to an example. Like, if I'm training an AI model, like you gave the example of tumor and looking for cancer in the tumor. So if I feed the AI model, and this ties into a little bit of like data poisoning, maybe, which is attack against AI. If I feed the AI model like a bunch of pictures of cats, so it's an expert at identifying cats, how do I make sure the model knows what a cat is? Because if I feed it a picture of a dog, and I'm trying to poison the AI model and start feeding more pictures of dogs, the AI model might think a cat is a dog, right? Or how do we train that model and avoid like that data poisoning attack?
That's part of having a wide data set. So if you're trying to get the AI to recognize a cat and you only feed it images of cats, it's going to think everything is a cat. And so you feed it a dog and it's going to go, that's a weird cat, but that's still a cat. If you feed it a bunch of images of cats and then a bunch of images of dogs and say, this is not a cat, this is a dog, and then a bunch of hamsters and say, this is also not a cat, this is a hamster, then when you give it a dog or a hamster, it's going to go, oh, that's a dog, that's a hamster, I know that's not a cat.
And so part of the model, the training is to say, you have to label, this is a cat, this is a cat, this is not a cat, it's a dog, this is not a cat, it's a hamster, and that's how the model learns.
Pretty much.
But you have to give it a very massive amounts of data, because all of a sudden if it sees, I don't know, like a bear, if you didn't tell it that wasn't a cat or it was a cat, it might classify that bear, right? It might say the bear's a cat.
Yep, exactly. So part of the thought process is that it'll start to recognize things that don't look like cats aren't cats. So hopefully if it sees a bear, it'll say, this looks like a really big hamster mixed with a dog, so I don't think this is a cat. But it's unpredictable. There's no way of knowing for sure how it's going to react to bad data. So having a wide training set is really important. The alternative is having a very narrow application, which is what I think we're seeing a lot of manufacturers lean towards. Back to the, you know, cancer diagnosis example, if you're only feeding it images of tumors and you're saying you need to figure out what this tumor is and that is all you do, you do not worry about determining if this is a blood clot or not or something like that, then it's going to be very well trained on tumors. And if you feed it an image of a blood clot, it's not going to know what to do. It's going to freak out. But you have to have just that user awareness. Hey, this needs to be an image of a tumor. You're going to get weird results if you feed it anything else. You shouldn't know what to expect. Make sure you're only providing it images of tumors and verify what you're feeding into the AI. So it is a user awareness problem and then just an application problem as well. Generalist models like ChatGPT, they train on a little bit of everything. So they're trying to recognize anything. And that's not always going to be the safest approach with a medical context.
Yeah, and that's a good example of what manufacturers should do. Maybe narrow it down to something very specific. If it sees something that's not an image of a tumor, it just says it doesn't know versus trying to make a guess. So that's something a manufacturer could do to reduce the risk. And they can train the physician or whoever's making the diagnosis about the model and how the AI works as well and label that appropriately. So I want to talk about a couple other things here with AI, some of the main attacks. We kind of covered data poisoning. What about model inversion?
So model inversion, it's more or less trying to figure out what the model is on the inside. So
because the model is like a black box, right? So we're feeding it data and see what comes out and trying to like reverse engineer what the actual model does. Is that correct?
Yep, exactly. So like when ChatGPT first came out, and still to this day, but much less so now, people would give it all sorts of prompts, you know, ignore all previous instructions. Instead,
we get those on our chatbot on our website all the time. People try to hack it and say that.
Yeah. I should probably try to do that, see if I can be the lucky winner. But anyways, it's essentially trying to say, you know, feed me information that you're not supposed to give me. So like with a large language model, like our chatbot or like ChatGPT, it usually has a system level prompt And that prompt is a precursor to any bit of information that it provides. And so it's saying, you know, you are ChatGPT. You are meant to provide information on a wide range of tasks, blah, 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 blah. And so you can try to leak out that information to understand a little bit more about its behavior. Or you can try to send in some information to try to get it to pass out information about how it was developed, what is happening on the back end, where it's stored, stuff like that. And
or,
so,
or like PHI, right? I mean, if with model inversion, you're trying to infer, and figure out what the sensitive data could be or intellectual property could be, like you were mentioning.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really important to put guardrails on an AI model and make sure that it is not going to respond poorly to someone trying to attack it like that. There are some, I think there are a couple of sort of capture the flag games online where you're trying to jailbreak the AI and it gets progressively more and more defensive. You're trying to get it to disclose a password and move on to the next level. And so having an AI that is able to detect and fend off attacks by itself is really important. It's similar to just building security into a regular application or a device, but with an AI, the AI should essentially be trained on the attacks instead of just being hardened against it. So it'll say, oh, I recognize what's going on here. I'm not going to disclose this information. You know, I have these guardrails in place to protect what is important, PHI, proprietary information, IP, things like that.
Yeah, and we're also doing some of the fundamental cybersecurity things like input validation and balance checking, it sounds like. Like the AI should be smart enough to know what data it can, you know, accept and everything else it rejects and how big the data can be and reject it as well. Is that fair to say?
Yep, exactly. So an AI should, and this, you know, goes back to the problem of getting an AI to say, I don't know. But if it sees something that is really far outside of what it's supposed to recognize, like let's say we have that tumor detection AI and you suddenly feed it in a blood clot and it says, this doesn't look like any tumor I've ever seen before. I'm going to spit this back out. That would be an ideal situation.
Okay. Let's talk about one of the other AI attacks, which is model evasion. So can you explain a model evasion a little bit?
Yeah, basically what you're trying to do is you're messing with the input to trick the output. So let's say, we'll stick with the cancer diagnosis example, it's easy. You feed it a blood clot that for some reason looks like a tumor, and it looks at that and it says, oh, I think this could actually be a tumor, and so I'm going to apply the reasoning that I have against that, you know, tumor. It'll then say, oh, there's a problem with this, or, you know, yes, this person has cancer because the nurse fed in the wrong image to it and it was able to recognize it, like an attacker poisoned in the image. An alternative could just be back to, this is a little bit less on the AI side of things since the AI would be operating properly. But if an attacker was able to swap out a just sort of benign tumor for a malignant tumor in that image, and then someone feeds in the malignant tumor and misdiagnoses the patient. But usually this is going to be trying to trick the model itself with the input. So in that example, you know, a patient could get diagnosed with cancer when they don't actually have it because the AI was confused by the data that it got fed in and provided a bad result. And then, you know, that patient could be prescribed with going through chemo or something really, really detrimental when they don't actually need it.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, in cybersecurity, we always talk about CIA, confidentiality, integrity, availability. Which one of those do you think is the most relevant? It sounds like we're talking a lot about integrity with AI and medical devices. Would you say that's still true?
Definitely. So I think that integrity is the biggest problem with AI. It's very easy to get it to provide false results. So making sure that something can stay valid, stay the way it should be, is a very difficult challenge. That's not to say the other issues aren't still issues. So confidentiality, we were talking a little bit about the model inversion which really does touch up on that confidentiality issue. If someone can bleed out information about the AI, that's very sensitive, or if someone can bleed out information about the training data or what the AI has diagnosed in the past, things like that are all very, very important information that need to be kept safe. Availability can be another big problem. Usually AI is, we're not seeing it as much in very quick, short turnaround diagnosis processes. It's more for like an IVD space or an image enhancement space, which isn't very time sensitive. Now, that's not to say that time sensitive applications aren't out there for AI and that they won't continue to expand. But that availability just in the current state is less of a concern as opposed to integrity and confidentiality. Well, we still have that cancer example. If you have the AI model that gets hacked and it gets shut down for a day, with cancer, cancer isn't going to kill you in a day. If you get diagnosed today or if you get diagnosed tomorrow, there's not realistically going to be too much of a change of the outcome. Of course, if you push it back by a month, it could be a big deal. But it's not going to matter if it's a day. Now, if we're looking at something that's very time sensitive, like if you're trying to diagnose sepsis, then you need to have a very, very fast turnaround. And so something being shut down for even a couple of hours could prove fatal to a patient.
So that brings me to one of the other attacks. I was just thinking about it, like performance drift, which ties into the availability, right? Because you're saying, over time, if the model degrades performance, then it could cause a delay in a diagnosis. And if you have something like sepsis, it could result in somebody potentially dying.
Yep, exactly. And so performance drift is when the performance of the model just slowly decays. Any of the underlying data can just slowly get altered and some of the information that it's fed in, like a machine learning model that's continuously evolving. If you're just feeding it slightly bad data every time, it's going to get slightly worse throughout the life cycle without it immediately crashing and causing a bunch of problems and saying, oh, I don't understand this data. And so it would be like if you were feeding it in a bunch of images of cats instead of feeding it a bunch of images of dogs to try to break it, because it would see the dogs and it wouldn't know what's going on at all. It would be like if you fed it a cat with five legs and then
you just slowly modify what a cat is and keep and then pretty soon it thinks all these things are cats. Right?
Yeah, you slowly start
changing the shade of a cat. Three eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so eventually it's like a green cat. And then if you feed it a regular black cat, it's gonna look at it and say, no, cats are green now. And so that can't be a cat. So you can slowly change what the output of a model is going to be and its behavior by feeding it in slightly bad data throughout its life cycle.
Interesting. So while we were discussing this, it brought up a point I was thinking about. So if I'm a patient and I have, you know, an IVD, in vitro diagnostics, a sample of my tissue, let's say it's like I had cancer on my nose once. I take a sample of my nose, run it through IVD, it tries to detect if I have cancer. Is that sample still stored in the AI indefinitely? Like, can somebody like a year later grab my data, the results of my sample out of the AI, or is it like just analyzed and deleted? Or is that up to the manufacturer to figure out?
It's usually going to be up to the manufacturer. So this is a huge security topic, and it's why, you know, like at Blue Goat, our policy is nothing can ever get fed into ChatGPT, because anything you put into ChatGPT, it's going to use for more training data. So if we're talking about, oh, how do you solve XYZ problem? We have a vulnerability in this device, and then someone's trying to query similar information, it's going to spit out the information that it learned from us, which could potentially be sensitive to our customers.
Well, that's because the ChatGPT is not our own. We don't own the model.
Correct.
Infrastructure. Yeah.
But a lot of different AI models are like that. So if you have an offline closed model that is only training, you know, off of that initial data set, it's not going to evolve and get better, but it isn't going to retain potentially sensitive information. So usually there has to be a middle ground. Sort of the easy middle ground is, let's say you take that cancer image. Usually it's going to be in the form of a DICOM image, which stores information about the patient as well as the image itself. if you can scrub out that patient information and just say, you know, this is a John Doe here, and then feed it into the AI, it's still going to store that information, but it's not going to be as big of a deal since you can't tie it back to somebody. So the AI is going to continue to evolve on just anonymous data.
Yeah, we're talking about the chatbot on our website. I updated that the other day, and I fed it knowledge about our services and our web pages and blogs. And it gave me this notification that it would delete all the knowledge after it was ingested. Now, I don't really understand how that works. I mean, I can understand it would delete the PDF I fed it, but it still has to have the knowledge to give an answer. So it's still there. It's just not the actual documents there. So it's kind of like a weird message. You know, I was thinking, well, you still have the knowledge. It's just on the form of a file, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but I'd figure it would be something around there. Usually, storing the raw information itself is, of course, can be a lot more dangerous than just having knowledge about the information. Because if you can get, we'll go back to, you know, some of these attacks like model evasion or model inversion, it would more be around the model inversion side. If you can get an AI to spit out some of its training data, you could get it to spit out that document in its entirety, which that would be really bad, as opposed to it just giving out the summary that it remembers about the document, which might be a little bit less dangerous. And usually there'll be guardrails in place so that the AI isn't going to disclose anything too dangerous, even if it remembers it.
It sounds like these guardrails are super important you keep talking about, because otherwise I could go to ChatGPT. If I've uploaded knowledge, which I have, to a customized ChatGPT, I could say, provide me the source documents for your knowledge base, right? And if it spits it out, you know, then in a medical device, it could be the same thing. It has the source data, like your DICOM image example, which has patient data in the image itself.
Exactly. And the other problem is, if you're able to spit out everything that goes into the AI, you could effectively try to replicate it. So you can, in a sense, reverse engineer the AI, which is a big concern for intellectual property and then privacy with these manufacturers. They want to do whatever they can to keep their AIs functional, but still a little bit secretive.
All right. The last one I want to cover, because it's a hot topic with the FDA and with AI in general, is model bias. So the whole idea is the AI can be biased. Now, when we talk about model bias in the context of medical devices, how would you explain that? Like, what's the easy way to explain it?
So that's when you're feeding it bad training data, more or less.
If we go back to the cat example, that we kind of talked about model bias, right, already? But we just didn't label it model bias, yeah?
So like with the cat example, if you feed it 100,000 images of orange cats and 50 images of black cats, it's probably going to assume that most cats are orange, which there are a lot of orange cats, but not all cats are orange. And so it's going to be heavily biased towards identifying orange cats instead of black cats or instead of gray cats or whatever.
So with medical, the tumor example, if I feed it like millions of tumors with cancer and very few without, it's going to have a bias towards diagnosing cancer.
Yeah,
right?
it's gonna assume at a baseline that people have cancer. It's gonna say, well, I've looked at, you know, 1,010,000 slides of tumors, and 1,000,000 of them were malignant. So I'm going to just assume that anyone with a tumor has cancer, because most of my training data says that most tumors have cancer in them. So that's where having a really good data set for training becomes super important. Additionally, a lot of manufacturers...
A diverse data set, like people like to say, right?
Yeah, a diverse data set. A lot of manufacturers will also try to essentially take a pre-built model and use it for a different application, which makes sense. AI models are time-consuming and expensive to train. So they'll say that, well, someone else has already trained this model. Like ChatGPT is a great model. We can just put a wrapper around it and use it for our own purposes. They've already spent the money and the time to train it up, so why don't we use it? But what if there's a bias or a problem in ChatGPT, and they introduce that bias into their own model inadvertently by using a pre-trained model? So training your own model, while of course it's very difficult and expensive, has a lot of upsides in the fact that you can control exactly what's going on and try to filter out these biases in advance.
Yeah, so it sounds like we've covered like indirectly what a lot of manufacturers can do to secure AI, because we talked about the countermeasures for some of these attacks. What are some other things they can do? One thing that I think is a commonly overlooked is considering cybersecurity from the beginning. I know that if I'm a manufacturer creating AI, I'm going to focus a lot on my model, and probably not cybersecurity is not my concern, but just like non-AI enabled devices, cybersecurity should be considered from the requirements phase and then in the design phase. Is there anything else? Like, this is a total product lifecycle and a secure product development framework, the FDA likes to call it. What else should manufacturers do? Like, what are a couple of the top things you think?
Yeah, I think just security early and often is really, really important. So testing your AI as soon as you've created the model, figuring out how it's going to respond to different training data sets, using a variety of training data before you finalize the AI. So let's say you feed it in. Let's say you train your AI for diagnosing cancer. You think you've done a pretty good job, and then you run it through 100,000 examples to see how accurate it is. And you realize that it's getting around 92% accuracy. And then you feed it in a different data set, and you realize it's getting 96% accuracy now. So now you have to step back and think, okay, why is this data set more effective? So it just goes back into garbage in, garbage out, really, really carefully vetting and thinking about what information goes into an AI model is super important.
And hiring or consulting with cybersecurity experts early and often, like you said, because like a lot of device manufacturers are trying to get their product to market. They don't understand cybersecurity as a specific area of expertise. So early and often, consulting at the beginning, not at the end when the product's almost, completed.
Exactly. And it's, similar to the training data, as you have an issue pop up later on in the development cycle, it's going to be very costly and time consuming to retrofit it. So if you're able to get it right the first time, which is what having, a consultant who's very well experienced in cybersecurity on these devices will, it'll give you that advantage, then you don't have to worry about having to go back and fix stuff later on. Just looking at what sort of attacks can happen to AI, it's still super new, it's evolving super fast. And so the researchers and the consultants that are working on the cybersecurity need to be on the cutting edge of it. You need to have a really good understanding for exactly what's going on with the device, what the latest AI threat trends are, and figuring out, hey, what can really go wrong? What do we need to worry about here? So it's cybersecurity in general, it's a constantly losing battle for everybody. Everyone's trying to keep up to everyone else, and nobody's doing a very good job at it. And so luckily we think that, here at Blue Goat, we're doing a pretty good job of staying on the cutting edge of it, especially with some of this newer stuff. And so we're able to keep stuff pretty safe when it might be under attack otherwise. But just getting involved as quickly as possible is the best way to make sure that a device, and especially an AI device, is secure.
All right. I want to cover one more thing, then we wrap up here because we're almost out of time. We've been talking a lot about what we call pre-market, right? Getting the device ready to be cleared by the FDA or, ready to go on the market. Now, from a post-market perspective, like the device is already on the market. It's fielded. It's in a healthcare delivery organization, a hospital or clinic, and it's got AI in it. What can we do to make sure that device remains secure? I mean, we have our normal post-market monitoring, but is there anything else to make sure like some of these things don't happen over time? Like anything come to mind for you?
I think one of the big things that is AI specific that doesn't really happen as much with a typical medical device is you have to make sure that the output of the AI stays consistent. So this is sort of that, AI drift, the performance drift a little bit. Regularly testing the benchmarks of the AI to make sure that it isn't getting worse over time is really important. It's hard to track exactly what gets fed into an AI. So, let's say when you first create that AI, you feed it 10,000 examples and you say, great, we're at 99.9% accuracy. And then the next year you get down to 96% accuracy. And then the next one, it's maybe 85 and then 72. something is very clearly going wrong. It's getting fed bad data. And so you need to figure out why that drift is happening. So in addition to just looking at the security of a device and figuring out what could be wrong with it, it's important to make sure that it's just staying accurate. The AI hasn't degraded in any detrimental way.
So we're establishing a baseline and then doing some anomaly detection effectively.
Exactly. Just trying to make sure that that baseline is very solid and then it stays at or near that baseline.
Yeah, that was a big problem in the DoD when I used to work in the DoD. Like, people wanted a firewall to establish a baseline. So you could turn the firewall on in learning mode. It would learn all the traffic and say, this is the baseline. But I was very against that because what if there's already malicious traffic on your network? Now you're establishing that as a baseline, right? So it's important we actually have an accurate baseline. Otherwise, yep, we can't exactly detect a real anomaly. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap up here. Before we wrap up, any final words of wisdom on AI and what we can do to protect against it or what we should be concerned about?
I think these could be the final words of wisdom for just about any topic, but security early and often. Don't leave it to the last minute. It's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of time.
I think that's going to be your tagline. You say that all the time. Security. You say that and necessary evil quite a bit.
I think I should get shirts made.
Yeah. Early and often on the front and necessary evil on the back.
Right? Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I think, for AI, for me, it's like about prompt engineering. Like, the better you are at asking the AI things and telling it how to program it, the better your results. And that's the same with, any technology, I guess. So I think we'll wrap up here. I think we covered most everything, the FDA's guidance, a little bit about AI history, some of the attacks, some guidance for manufacturers. So thanks for tuning in today, and we hope to see you next time on the Med Device Cyber Podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Med Device Cyber Podcast. We hope you gained valuable insights into the world of medical device cybersecurity. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Should cybersecurity be top of mind for your medical device company and you wish to learn more about how Blue Goat Cyber can help your business, please click on the link in the show notes below to book a discovery call with our team. Stay informed and empowered to protect yourself and the people your company serves. Until next time, stay safe and secure.